putting up reindeers and singing songs of joy and peace. I wish I had a river I could skate away on. But it don't snow here, it stays pretty green. I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I could teach my feet to fly. I wish I had a river
again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and joining me in the studio today, Holly Iglesias. Hello, Holly. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm glad. It's something I've been wanting to do for a couple of years, so it seems like a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, you have two books out.
I do.
Is it in 1 year?
Two years. One in 2008 and one in 2010. The first one was rejected 36 times, and the second one was taken on the second hit. So
there you go.
Prime the pump, you know. Late bloomer.
What kept you so long?
I didn't think of myself as a poet until I went to get my doctorate, and I thought I was writing creative nonfiction and had never heard about prose poems. A person I was working with in a creative writing class said, just put it in a paragraph, see what happens. And all of a sudden everything kept getting shorter and shorter, and he kept saying, well, you know, you're a prose poet. And and I actually landed up writing my dissertation on women's prose poetry, which is another book. It's called Boxing Inside the Box. So, it was a good thing somebody introduced me to that, because putting things inside a box under a lot of pressure has been very fruitful for me.
Yeah, indeed it has.
Good container.
And nice work.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And so those two books are Souvenirs of a Shrunken World, which was last year's book, right?
Yeah. Right. Year before last.
That's right. Angles of Approach.
Yes.
Which is the new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful stuff. I enjoyed so much hearing you read up in Burnsville when we were up there
at
the Carolina Mountains Literary Festival.
It was fun. I couldn't believe what it was like literary fiends crawling the streets, and they were there all day, and people, not fiends in a bad way, they were just really into it.
Avid.
The people who took too many photographs at the World's Fair were called Kodak fiends, so I think I have fiends on my mind.
There you go.
Yeah. I got to tell you, there's something really funny about sitting here with the headphones on and smiling across the table. I keep seeing that Saturday Night Live thing and those two women going, oh, very nice. Yes. And then Betty White starts saying, like, weird things about muffins and stuff. Well, anyway, so glad to be here.
Well, yes. Let's talk about your recipe for muffins.
Okay.
That's the second book.
This book, the new one, is about 7 years worth of work, and the three angles of approach are, they kind of refer to my, how I see my life, and the three angles of approach are nostalgia, which I think of as something that's very suspect, and I'm very anti-sentimental. So when I learned that the etymology of nostalgia is the Greek word for homesickness, and I left home at 18 and have lived in about 40 places. So nostalgia speaks to me in a big way.
Yeah.
And then the middle of section is called menace, because I always think, in history, there's always some agent of menace at work. And then the last part is called confession, because of my Catholic school upbringing.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And the whole, you know, a play on confessional poets and all
right.
that. Because
right.
I don't use the word. I don't do too many I poems.
Right.
So confessional is also a little suspect for me.
Uh-huh.
So those are the angles of approach.
Okay. Well, why don't you treat us to, like, a selection of those?
All right.
Let's hear what they're like.
Okay, well.
And these are in a boxes. These are prose poems.
They're prose poems. They're justified left and right. They look like press releases. and some of the theory about prose poetry is it's playing against reader expectation. Uh-huh. And my take on it was that lineated verse, it kind of gives a curvature on the right. It's a lovely looking
right.
thing.
You're not justified and generally.
Often what I find women writing about in prose poetry is unlovely things.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting things under pressure inside a box kind of makes it a little bit more chunky. I don't know how else to put it. I'm built kind of chunky, so maybe it speaks to me physiologically also.
A resonance there, yet another.
Yeah. I'll start off with a funny one. I think it's funny.
Okay.
The birth of ranch dressing.
This is, yeah.
And I'm always trying to do history through the small detail. So I'm
lovely.
Talking
this
about the
a,
50s and right, ranch dressing.
It's a critical turning point in our history.
Indeed. Indeed. It certainly was in our household.
Mm-hmm.
Birth of ranch dressing. The time for French had passed. Gone the lettuce wedge drenched in orange, gone the lucky penny salad. Mother had changed, switched to Hidden Valley. Inside the cruet, something impossibly white, something that moved her to squeal, "It's ranch, it's homemade," and left us wondering what ranch, what state, though we suspected Nevada, troubled by the thought of her in Western togs flirting with cowpokes as she pondered divorce from our father. Yeah. It's fun. I'm trying to also take a poke at suburbs and how white they are, impossibly white. And my dad was an agnostic and my mother was a devout Catholic. And his attitude toward his children, who had to be raised as Catholics, was that if you had one with a vivid imagination, which would be me, putting like the lives of the saints in my hands was really dangerous because I would just go for it. We would play martyr in the backyard. And so I'm trying to think about, you know, wanting to be a martyr and dealing with Hidden Valley, impossibly white, ranch dressing.
Yes.
So,
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you'd had brothers, did you have brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Chance? Yeah. Well, playing martyr would have been.
They had to be the centurions.
Yes, that's right. I mean, you know, you might have wound up on a pyre or something. You know.
Yeah. Well, that was the hope. I mean, because if you're a martyr, you go straight to heaven.
You're right. No stops. Mm-mm. No purgatory. No. Yeah.
No.
No further clarification needed.
That's right. You just go straight to heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's hear another one of these.
Okay. All right.
That one's actually been anthologized, I believe, hasn't it? That,
it has.
Yeah.
It has.
It
was in a book called Sweeping Beauty, American Poets Do Housework.
Yeah.
And Susan Stanberg read it on Morning Edition, which was really
all
cool.
All right.
Here's a local one, Chicken Hill, which is over by the River Arts District.
Right.
Because I have moved a whole lot of times, trying to find out local history is my way in always, and I drink a lot of coffee at Klingman, so I had to find out about the history of...
That's a wonderful little cafe.
Oh, I love that place. Yeah. Part of the book, this is a plug for Klingman, part of this book was written out in front of Klingman.
At Klingman's Cafe.
Yeah.
And they also have one of the town's best Rubens.
Oh, I haven't had that.
You haven't had the Reuben yet?
Uh-uh.
It's really is.
Okay.
The best I've found so far in Asheville. So,
I'll do that. I'm usually too. I go there to read papers.
Yeah.
So I'll feel kindly toward, you know, the writers and tanking up on coffee.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this is comes from learning about people living in mill housing at Chicken Hill. And at, I think, some level, all history is local history. So.
Yeah, right.
Chicken Hill, 1943. Happy days came and went, as did the songs that Roy Price and his wife sang as they walked to the mill and back. until the crash, until the strike that left 5 men dead beside the fence, until she expired birthing the girl. 2 babies on his hands and nothing but a quilt to keep him company till Lily came along, right out of the blue. How she soothed him, that woman, cooing at him, pulling lint from his hair, bearing him 3 more sons, all swiftly baptized by pressing their heels into a bowl of dough. Biscuits with beans, biscuits with corn. Heaven was made of this, Roy knew it. And his 5 children in bleached flour sack shirts knew it too.
That does catch a lot of local history.
Yeah.
And a lot of history in general. I mean, this is, you know, it catches an era in lots
yeah.
of ways. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And my parents, you know, were young, starting their family in the 40s, so uh-huh. it speaks to me in a big way.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's mine our generation.
Too. And, yeah, had family who were mill workers, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah. My mother, my grandmother was one of the mill girls. Back in the 20s. Back even
like in Gastonia?
Like in Gastonia, exactly.
Well, yeah. The big strike yeah, that yeah. turned things around.
Yeah, yeah, she was there for that.
Wow.
While she was living, I didn't know enough about the strike to really ask her, you know, what that was like and what her experience had been of that. But, yeah, always, someday, if we ever get time travel, I'm going to go back and talk to her.
Yeah. Yeah, wouldn't you like the inside story on that?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
her sure. being a mill girl, I lived in New England before I moved here, and learning the importance of young women in the labor movement yeah. was really striking to me how yeah. Vehement these 14, 15, 16-year-old girls were. And I'm sure it was the same once, you know, they moved the factories yeah. from New England
to the south
right. and before they moved to Mexico and
right.
always going for the cheap labor. But right. we have these really young women to thank for a lot of our yeah. labor standards.
Yeah, we do indeed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like 8-hour days and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, let's go for another one.
Okay.
Now, which section are these from? Are these
Chicken Hill is the first poem in the book.
Okay.
So after the frontispiece of called Rhetoric, mm-hmm. which, well, I kind of like this. This is my idea of sweeping you through history
right.
and taking liberties
all
with
right.
it.
All right. Let's hear it.
Rhetoric. You avoid breezy questions. The musings they call forth that do not pass for answers but nod, rather, toward some small intimation of a reason to be here. The black tulip plucked from a neighbor's yard, or jottings on notepaper the color of dusk when you nursed a carafe of Van Ordinaire until the light completely faded and it was no longer safe to walk back to the hotel. You shun the phrase body of work, buckling at the image of your words in a satin-lined box, the family gazing at sentences, paragraphs, grief-struck, but composed as they recall your writing implements, their evolutionary path from crayon to pencil, typewriter to laptop, a series akin to the march of progress in school books that always started with an ape at the left margin, walking toward the low-browed Homo sapiens, then an erect Neanderthal, his posture promising years of hunting and gathering, the mastery of tools that will spawn pyramids, aqueducts, monasteries sacked by barbarians, scripture translated into vulgar tongues, kings with their own churches, conquistadors claiming entire hemispheres in the middle of the page, then bolts of textiles, kegs of rum, leg irons and cotton gins, belching smokestacks and fireproof safes loosed upon the world by titans of industry, and finally the barrel-chested man in a Hamburg checking his pocket watch as a locomotive called the 20th century edges toward him from the right.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Real sweep to that one.
Yeah. Yeah, probably taking too much down for one gulp, but that's kind of how I do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it works. It works.
Thank you. Can I tell you one thing about the 20th century locomotive?
Yeah.
The reason that that's in there is that I wrote this book about the 1904 World's Fair, which my grandparents all attended, and it was this wonderland, like Disneyland, for people in 1904, but it was also this racist nightmare. So it was, you could see the 20th Chicago? Century. That was
1893. Okay.
Where the Ferris wheel was introduced as an observation deck.
Oh,
and
yeah.
St. Louis bought it from Chicago for their fair.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And they could not find a buyer, and so they dynamited it. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well.
The fair was very much like, watch out, you can see the 20th century. Everything's laid out there at the fair. What's ahead of us?
Yeah.
Which is the haunting part for me.
Right.
But I was doing research on it in St. Louis, and I saw pictures of the Hall of Transportation, and there was this locomotive that was the largest in the world that was on a turnstile, and the light kept going woo, woo, woo around the room, and people would go in there to get scared to death because it was so awesome and big and it could run you over. Well, the name of the locomotive was the 20th century. And that really helped me see the fair as, you know, get off the tracks because you could be next.
Yeah, right. And that was pretty much the story of.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Continues to be the story of in some sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have a poem that kind of ties into that idea.
Yeah.
Could I read it?
Yeah, please do.
It's about trains and the 20th century and how history has an effect even on the language we use.
Indeed it does.
Mm. Freight. Each face turns away, a hand cupped over the brow to shade eyes that no longer close. Each body standing. How could it be otherwise? No one can rest. Silence settles in. The crowd swells, solidifies, a wall of clothes. Shirts, shoes, pants in black and blue, aprons, socks, vests, and smocks, and sorry belts that cinch what little is left of them. Tracks approach, rails that haul them into our field of vision. We who wait at unforeseen stations, we whose mouths avoid words fouled by history. Hygiene, boxcar, furnace.
Nice. I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Did you grow up with railroads at all?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah? Like,
next door to my
house,
the Missouri Pacific Railroad.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you?
Yes, yeah. The Seaboard had a route about a block away, maybe. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
And can you sleep? That sound, to me, I can go right to sleep when I hear a train.
Yeah, yeah.
The romance of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was one at 11 o'clock every night that if I wasn't already asleep, that was time to go.
Uh-huh. That's your signal, mister.
Yep, yep.
Time for bed.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Do you live near a train now? Can you hear a train where you are?
I actually don't live near a train, but I am close enough to the river. You know, there's the route up the river that on the average night, I can actually hear it, you know, if I listen for it as it goes by. So, yeah. Sometimes because you can't see it, it's not, you know, it's like probably a mile away or something like that, you know, around a bend and across a stream and, you know, over to the river. So, but yeah, you can hear it. So I enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a great sound. Do you travel on trains?
I love to travel on trains. Yeah. It's my favorite way of travel, actually. Yeah. When I was going back and forth to the West Coast to British Columbia, I would often go on the Trans-Canada. Across the top, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Fantastic trip. Fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Highly recommended. Yeah.
Yeah, that's in my, you know, bag of things I want to do.
Yeah.
The across the top.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good route.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they have the domed cars and all that, so you actually get, you know.
And get the vistas.
And the thing I love about trains is that you can actually walk around them. I mean, you know, they're like little worlds.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, you've got a place to eat. You've got
the club car. You can play cards.
Car.
People are very friendly on trains.
People are very friendly. I actually made friends on every trip I took. I would make friends just about, and Yeah, wind up staying in touch with him for years sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, taking a journey with somebody, it's like taking a road trip with somebody. Yeah, I mean, that's right. Cement for sure.
Yeah, you get to know him real well, you know, in the space of a few days. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I got a road trip poem.
Oh, good. Let's
hear it. That just made me think of it.
Yeah.
I used to take the train to college from St. Louis to New Orleans, and on the Panama Limited.
Oh, yeah. Was that right down the river?
Yeah.
Beside the river?
Yeah.
St.
Louis, Memphis, New Orleans.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. I don't know what my parents were thinking of sending me to school there. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
A Catholic girl going to...
Oh, my God. And it was a Catholic school. It was a Jesuit school. And after about a week, I'm like, whoa, this is not the Catholics they thought. Because these were the worldliest priests I had ever met
these
in my
life. These are the New Orleans Catholics.
Wow. Wow, wow. Yeah, there's no... Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't get me going on that. Okay, this is a road trip.
Oh, I will.
Okay. All right. This came from driving with my partner, Catherine, from Western Massachusetts to Chicago. She was doing research on coyotes. Her book is about
coyotes. Oh, yeah.
Called The Hunter in Our Midst.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, to me, living on that extreme over in New England, it's like, I need to be down at this latitude, you know, uh-huh. D.C., you know, so I'm back in the middle, at least. So whenever we took a trip, I would feel myself this tipping down toward the Ohio-Mississippi Valley. Oh, we're getting closer to home. tripping. We enter the great bowl between Stockbridge and South Dakota, where all that is east or west drains into a single river. Wandering from donut to taco, coffee to coke, the miles accrue like indulgences as we snack our way through Ohio, past rusted plows and old country buffets and acres of portalettes. Without warning, the radio speaks, Dr. Laura shaming a caller to stop whining and do what needs to be done. Solid advice when taking the Midwest at 80 miles an hour. The 10-story cross on a grassy knoll. Mercy, mercy me, but a blur as we pass. You know,
nice.
We're from that generation that you can't have a grassy knoll without
That's
knowing
right.
what that means.
Yeah.
Bloodstained pink Chanel suits.
Yeah.
God. Gosh.
That's been an interesting era, hasn't it?
Indeed. Especially becoming considered historic relics, you know.
Oh,
like,
I know. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. So long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We know important stuff.
Yeah.
We have significant mileage.
Significant mileage, indeed. Mm-hmm. And are still on the road.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, let's try Mr. Jobim here.
Hmm. All right.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho. É o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho. É um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol. É a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol. É peroba do campo,
é o pó da madeira.
Canga também,
é uma tita pereira.
É madeira de vento. É um mistério profundo.
É o queira ou não queira.
É o vento ventando. É o fim da ladeira. É a viga, é o vão, festa da comida.
É a chuva chovendo. É conversa ribeira das águas de março. É o fim da canseira.
É o pé, é o chão.
É a mastradeira.
Passarinho na mão.
Pedra de atiradeira.
É uma ave no céu.
É uma ave no chão.
É um regato, é uma fonte.
É um pedaço de pão.
É o fundo do poço, é o fim do caminho. No rosto desgosto, é um pouco sozinho. É um estrepe,
é um breu.
É uma ponta,
é um ponto.
É um pingo,
pingando.
É uma cor,
é um conto.
É um peixe, é um gesto.
É uma pata brilhando.
É a luz da manhã.
É o tijolo chegando.
É a lenha, é o dia. É o fim da picada. É a garrafa de cana. Estilhaço na estrada.
É o projeto da casa, é o corpo na cama, é o carro enguiçado, é a lama, é a lama.
É um passo,
é uma ponte,
é um sapo,
é uma rã,
é um resto
de mato,
na luz,
da manhã.
São as águas de março fechando o verão.
E a promessa de vida no teu coração.
É José,
é um espinho
na mão,
é um corte
no pé.
São as águas de março fechando o verão.
É a promessa de vida no teu coração.
É pau,
é pedra,
é o fim
do caminho.
É um resto
de topo,
é um pouco
sozinho. É um passo, é uma ponte.
É um sapo, é uma rã.
É um belo horizonte.
É uma febre terçã.
São as águas de março fechando o verão.
É a promessa de vida no teu coração.
Pau,
pedra,
vinho,
peixe,
coco,
ovo,
vinho,
água,
hidro,
vida,
ol,
ponte,
morte,
aço,
sol.
São as águas de março fechando o verão.
É a promessa de vida no teu coração.
Padaba,
Padibaziza,
Zazaziza,
Azana
Mienha,
Anandede,
Anandede.
Was nice. That was. You're listening to Wordplay, by the way. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. And, of course, you are tuned to Asheville FM, because otherwise you wouldn't be hearing us. And my guest today is Holly Iglesias. Thanks so much for coming in, Holly. And thanks for bringing this cool music.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
Bossa Nova was like a big thing in high school.
Oh, yeah. I remember the Bossa Nova. Yes.
That mixed things up a bit.
Yes. It was... almost as big as the cha-cha-cha.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
It was very major. Yeah.
My parents were big music people, and they were always listening to Swing and Louis Prima and Keely Smith and Julie London, you know, all these kind of cool cat. You know, my dad would always snap his fingers in the car. It would embarrass me.
Uh-huh.
So the whole Bossa Nova thing was like, see, these are people from Latin America. We can do things differently. We can be just as cool as you are.
Yeah.
And my parents actually got behind the whole Jobim thing,
yeah,
which almost wrecked it for me. You know,
oh,
like,
right.
What do
yeah.
I have to do
right.
to tell you to turn that thing off? But anyway, I loved Jobim as a high school student and still do.
Yeah, yeah. That's still good.
Mm-hmm.
Mighty good indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you have something of an affinity for this Latin world.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
You're, shall we say, deeply immersed, you know,
yes.
to some extent.
Total immersion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. In a former life, I lived in Miami. I was married to a Cuban who was drafted, even though he was not a citizen.
Uh-huh.
And so we were draft evaders.
Oh, yeah. Was this during the Vietnam?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, the great Vietnam era. Yes.
So we lived out of the country for 3 years. And my daughter was born in Zaragoza, Spain. And then when we moved back, we lived in Miami, which is a Cuban place. And I was bilingual by then. Uh-huh. And my kids, my grandkids, they're Cuban Americans. They're bilingual people. And it's part of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've even done some commercials in Spanish.
You have done commercials in
Spanish?
That
is correct. Yes.
You heard it here.
Yeah, I won't even tell you what some of them were. Chewing gum was the one I can talk about.
Chewing gum. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, do you remember it?
No. No, no, no.
No.
No, the one I... well, never mind. I won't go into the
come
other
on,
one.
Come it's on, come on.
All right. Well, I did one for a... it was for a Chilean company, and it was for douche. All right, so it's a woman and her daughter walking down the beach at South Beach.
Uh-huh.
And she's saying, ay, pero mi hija te sientes mucho más fresca con la ducha íntima, Lulu. And, you know, you're just holding up this product thinking, this is not happening to me. And the director's saying, you Cubans talk so fast. And I'm like, I am so from Missouri and not from Cuba. So, you know, lighten up on the accent thing with me, all right? And I had this, you know, little... blonde 14-year-old girl with me, and we were talking, you know, feminine hygiene, mom and daughter on the beach.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah, so
classic commercial situation.
Yeah.
One you wouldn't see in most, probably not in America.
No.
In the U.S., that
no.
is. America,
no.
yes. The U.S., no.
Correct. That's right. America is very big. Often forget that.
Yeah. Not synonymous.
I was in a sitcom. I was in one episode of a sitcom that was not picked up. Yeah. I played like a Argentinian nurse ratchet person.
Oh, really?
In a plastic surgeon's office. So.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, major
it sounds
dramatic
promising.
Accomplishments.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway.
And after all this, you still didn't wind up writing for the stage? I mean.
Right. I have never written.
Or yet.
Yeah, I would like to. I mean, I can see doing that whole yappy individual performance person, monster in a box. I mean, when I saw Spalding Gray, I'm like, oh my God. I know you. I mean, you're inside my head. But no, I haven't done that. I would like to.
Well, there's still time.
Yeah. I know. I need to spend a lot of time with Landon Godfrey, Miss Landon Godfrey.
Oh, Miss
perhaps
Landon
she
Godfrey.
Can
yes.
shepherd me toward thinking about that.
Yes, Landon is
multi-talented.
Multi-talented mm-hmm. and a past master of that particular world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And it serves her well in everywhere. Everywhere she goes.
Yeah.
And she has a book coming out in February.
She does. She does. And she was a guest on Wordplay just a few weeks ago. So. Always a treat. Mm-hmm. I always love having Landon on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so, yeah, for you out there in Radioland, you should go check the archives and download Landon's show or just, you know, give it a listen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she actually read at the Pulp Gallery last week.
How was that? What's that venue like? I've not been in it.
It's very nice. For those of you out there in Radioland who don't know the Pulp, it's in the... basement, really, of the Orange Peel, which is a wonderful music venue here in Asheville. So, and they turned, I don't know what this was originally, it's hard to say. It's given the history of the building, you know, but now it's a very intimate little bar space. You could easily fit 50 or 60 people in there, probably. But they've made it available for poetry readings. Once a month, the first Wednesday, I believe it is, of every month, except this coming month of November, it's going to be on November the 9th because of Election Day on November 2nd and, you know.
Other stuff.
So, yeah. So
neat.
November 9th. But it's well worth checking out, yeah. And it's a featured reader and then an open mic, so, and the open mic is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So.
There's another new place for readings at Books and Breadboard.
You mentioned this.
Down near the Biltmore.
Yeah, which I've not seen yet.
Yeah. And I'm reading there next Sunday.
Are you reading there next
5.
Sunday?
At 5. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then there's an open mic after the, they have the featured poet, and then they have an open mic.
Uh-huh.
So lots of venues. Firestorm?
Firestorm Cafe
Firestorm.
And Bookstore. Yes, right.
Malaprops, of course.
The first Sunday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, Asheville's.
Lucky to be here.
Yeah, we're now teeming with venues. It's mm-hmm. really a hoot. Quite a change from not so long ago.
It's hard to believe.
It is.
It's really hard to believe with the WordFest and all of the... it's just a fabulously literary place.
I know. Wild and crazy. There you go. So, yeah, next Sunday, you listeners out there in Radioland should probably go hear Holly live. Once again, where is that?
Books and Breadboard,
all right.
Which is just to the left of Starbucks down by the Biltmore. It's on.
Right.
It's 30 All Souls Crescent.
30 All Souls Crescent here mm-hmm. in Asheville. So go check it out. And you can always stream Wordplay later. Right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That's all
competing
right.
with
all
right. the other poetry venue, streaming venue.
But Wordplay is available all week, 24/7. So.
That's a cool thing. Load up your iPod.
That's right. Load up your iPod.
Uh-huh.
You can catch both. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about another poem or two? Do you have any poems that derive, you know, that come out of this experience in the
being a
Cuban world? Yeah.
Being a Midwestern Cuban person.
Midwestern Cuban person.
Indeed, I do. Thanks for asking. yeah, I do. I have a bunch, but the one I read often is The title is Morir Soñando, which means to die dreaming.
Okay.
And what you need to know is that Morir Soñando is also the name of a beverage that you can get at Nicaraguan restaurants in Miami. And it's one part condensed milk, one part orange juice concentrate over chipped ice.
Whoa.
And it is to die dreaming from the sugar shock of it.
Yes.
It's really, really good. And for those of you younger than me, you might need to know that Anita Bryant was the sunshine gal of South Florida. She sold orange juice, and she had been an actor, and then she became a shrieking political
activist
hating gay people.
Right.
The other thing you need to know in here is the phrase compramos oro means we buy gold.
Okay.
All right. Morir soñando, to die dreaming. And the epigraph is, I believe that more than ever before, there are evil forces around us. Anita Bryant. One. Vultures circle high above the federal building, while below, appetites bulge like wallets, each sign a lure. Spy store. Compramos oro. The America's couple in broad daylight, a dance of hemispheric attraction. The tiny waist between north and south clenched in the embrace of rough trade. Two. Fidelity's just monkey business in a town where fishing boats double as motels. And a former Miss America cites the good book to damn queers but not mermaids on water skis or pipe bombs in mailboxes, the moon looming low all the while, white as a cream pie in the hands of a clown. There's a little Gary Hart reference in there also. And, of course, Fidel, you know.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cuba.
Yeah.
It's a Cuban thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Let's try our Cuban track again.
Okay. Yeah. That would be good.
Buena noche, buena noche. Yengerejuma. Buena noche, ¿cómo está usted?
Yengerejuma.
Yeah.
Very nice stuff there. Yeah. And who's that by? That's...
Cachao.
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 Sounds like a... Yes.
And it's just a chant to a Yoruban god, Yenyere. And so they're calling him, and then they say, how are you? ¿Cómo está usted?
Yeah.
Yenyere guma la buena. And good evening.
Yeah.
Very over
nice.
And over.
Very
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
You can spin that one for 20 minutes and have a good time, as long as you got those little rum drinks, you know. Have a good time.
Indeed, no problem.
No, no.
No problemo, or no. Whatever the...
that's, no problemo.
Yeah.
Problema.
Problema, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, a lot of your life, for a good Midwestern girl, you've certainly... a lot of your life has been involved with the Southern world, of the Southern mm-hmm. part of the U.S. and the, mm-hmm. and Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really wanted to get off the white bread grid.
You were determined.
I was determined. And my parents sent me I went to New Orleans, and that was a huge jumble of culture. So to be attracted to living in an exile community, I mean, that certainly wasn't my intention. But yeah. To land up there, I learned a lot. It's interesting being an outsider in your own country.
Sure.
It's good for you.
It is.
It's instructive.
It is indeed. It is indeed, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear a Miami poem.
Okay, this is a historical Miami poem, which, again, that's how I find my way in when I move to a new place, is through local history.
Yeah.
And I thought Miami didn't have any history because white people had only gotten there like 10 minutes before I got there,
right,
which is,
right.
of course, an exaggeration. But yeah. Miami became a city, I think, in 1899,
right.
Once the railroad went through.
Right.
So,
but it didn't really grow until the 1920s. I mean,
right, the big land rush.
Right, the land rush. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's his name? William Jennings Bryant, by that time, was actually hawking real estate in the middle of Coral Gables, which was the City Beautiful, which is a planned community that was built in the 20s, and Miami took off.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
is about the founder of Miami's mother.
Oh, yeah.
George Merrick founded Coral Gables. He built it.
Uh-huh.
And it talk about nostalgia. I
uh-huh.
mean, it's meant to look like you're in the Mediterranean
huh.
or Dutch colonial Africa. There are different mm. areas, the Italian village, the Chinese village, the Mediterranean village.
Cool.
It's very much like
cool.
a world's fair.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is about...
Or Disneyland or...
yes, exactly. Well, it's all, in our American yeah. century, that is how it kind of played out. So this is the woman before this... takes off, and this is George Merrick's mother.
Okay.
Mr. Merrick's mother's rose. Modest, it keeps to our side of the fence. The fence is much a joke as George's tiny wife swatting mosquitoes with a tea towel. Futile, really, such niceties in a malarial swamp. First it was grapefruits, then Kunti starch, and now it's land, pure and simple. Little plots for the common man, the new man with his celluloid collar and factory wage, hoping to buy a piece of the City Beautiful on margin. A minister's son has no business doing business, but mine is to mind my tongue, tend the flowers and clip the roots dangling from strangler figs before they take over the lawn. If you've ever seen
nice.
A strangler fig.
I've never seen a strangler fig.
Oh.
No. Are they formidable?
They are formidable. They drop these dangly pendant roots, and then they coagulate, and they can pick up pieces of the sidewalk.
Wow.
They can take up a building lot, so
right.
you have to keep up with them.
Yes, indeed.
And
they
you
sound
know,
like those things that cover temples in India.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah.
suddenly lost to the, in the jungle.
Just like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that has been the experience of mm-hmm. real estate magnates in South Florida is always hacking nature back,
yeah.
which
yeah.
is ridiculous because that's why people went there.
Yeah, well, you know.
Ain't that America?
Ain't that America?
Yeah. Ain't that Cuba?
Yeah, 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 indeed, indeed. So it sounds like your experience in New Orleans was really kind of a watershed for you.
Yeah.
Have you stayed in touch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was, I don't know, I think my parents sent me there because it was a Jesuit college, and I saw it as this, you know, it's a steamy place and great music, and it was just so rich an experience. Yeah. It's just, it's like poetry. It is experiential. There is no commodifying New Orleans. And its similarity to St. Louis is that it is as much a black city as it is a white city.
Right.
And the influence of the different nationalities that ruled it live on, and it's just thick. I mean, talk about keeping up with the strangler fix. It's like cut it back with a machete. It's just thick, the history that's there, and I loved it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. You were, what, 18?
Yeah, I was ready.
Yeah.
I was ready, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is going to work for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I managed to do well in college. I don't know how.
Yeah, in spite of it all.
In spite of it all. Yeah. I mean, I knew I had to keep up the grades in order to, for them to continue subsidizing.
So you could stay there.
Right. That's right. And I think I did. When I was a young person, I thought I would stay there.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out that way. But
yeah.
I have kept touch. Actually, my dear friend from college lives a block from me, and he and his family left New Orleans at the time of Katrina.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've known him for 45 years.
Yeah.
And he's a New Orleans guy through and through.
Yeah. That's some depth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what a. Have you been there since the hurricane?
I have not been there since the hurricane. Yeah. And only twice before that, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, it's a knockout city.
Mm-hmm. It really is. Yeah.
And once I went there, the first time I went there was actually in February, and it was the first cold snap of that severity that they'd had in like decades.
Mm.
And the pipes had frozen on all the, you know, the hotels and so on, because they're all outside, you know, or were at that time. I don't know. They may have moved them in now. But so they had to relocate us to a, let's see, I think it was originally on the 7th or 8th floor or something. They had to move us all down to like the 2nd floor because the water was running up to there.
To there. Yeah, didn't go any higher.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
But it was amazing. Even in 40 degree weather, it didn't stop.
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
My first Mardi Gras there, I went by myself down to the quarter, and I was just a gomer in paradise, like, whoa, look at that. And my purse was stolen. I was using a restroom in a bar, long lines. I knocked on a stall because it seemed like somebody was in there for too long. Yeah. This huge tranny comes out of there, dressed up like a butterfly, decked me in the face, knocked me down. And even that was like, God, I love this place. This would never happen in St. Louis. This is so great. Like, you know, the things you can't tell your parents, that is your true education.
Right.
So, I loved it. Yeah. I loved it.
Well, let's hear some of your New Orleans-based work.
Okay. I've got a long one, and I've got a couple short ones.
Well,
do you think we have time for all that?
We've got about 7 to 8 minutes, so let's...
Yeah. All right. I'll do the a short one first.
Okay.
Called Theory of Flight, which is about, as we were talking about, our generation.
Yeah.
And this is in New Orleans. Theory of Flight. We watched frat boys chug can after can of Dixie beer, waiting for them to puke so we could finally kiss hope goodbye, get into cars with them, and drive along the levee till the gas ran out. Our parents no longer asked where we'd been, and we no longer told them our bodies were battlegrounds beyond consecration. Long before the summer of love, we retreated into fantasy, stitching verse into our hymns, rolling joints with a holy card, dancing with strangers at honky-tonks along the river road.
I love that one. Coming of age, coming of age.
Yeah, definitely coming of age. I don't know as I'll read the other short one, because if I'm going to read the long one, I might not have time.
Read the long one. Yeah.
This is the only...
We'll do it again.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
This is the only long poem I've ever written, and it came out of thinking about the damage done in Hurricane Katrina, and I realized how selfish and self-absorbed I was feeling that... What it made me realize was that what innocence is for, and I learned this in New Orleans, is its one purpose is to lose it.
Yeah.
So this is, it's a Catholic title. It's a Catholic town.
Oh, yes.
Mass for the Happy Death of Innocence.
Right.
Girls sashaying to the drugstore for smokes, for mint pastilles and betadine. Lunch counter ladies sucking their teeth, dabbing sweat from their lips with lavender handkerchiefs, pouring more chicory for Father Poche, poor soul, too late for communion, too early for scotch. Candyman has come and gone, oh my Candyman, he's come and gone. Boys hide in the trees and trees that never lose leaves, boys drinking beer who jeer and flirt and whisper nasties onto the hats of passersby. A girl presses the small of her back against a tree, cocks one foot behind the ankle of the other, the very air an invitation to spoil, carnival just a place between the legs. Air, the air that rarely moves, damp as anything in the mouth and leaves that never fall. A single blossom of tea olive, white, the size of a pinky nail, gives off a scent that can buckle a grown man's knees, plant the idea of sex right now behind his eyes. Shoes melting into the mud, the tar on the street, odors evolving with progress, up or down Canal Street, Annunciation. Standing in the shade, heels sunk in the soft soil of the neutral ground, a woman fingers a token, her friend rolling crisp white paper down the length of a baguette, offering a bite as the trolley approaches, its wheels clacking, sparks flying high and low. Like a scar from a thousand whippings, the levee rises between river and peril, young men high on the swell of it taking their leisure. Stuck with schoolyard names, Bobby, Baby, Jimmy D, they consider themselves boys, always will, even when lifting the skirt of a wife, a mistress, a forbidden young thing. Everything that sloshes in a bottle of pink Chablis smiles on them, gives the nod to their antics as sun bronzes the water. Come dusk, they depart, gallants on the prowl for cherry-studded cocktails and girls who straddle stools like they can't get enough of anything, who booze with boys through an eternal childhood of damp air and the tropics imperative to couple. The only breeze enters the bar from a tiny window to the street, where pedestrians buy pints of Crown Royal and rye. Clawing the vinyl bumper, a weathered woman goes for the record, six skip-and-go nakeds, while the one who never eats, who never comes inside, stumbles into a metal cart of a vendor yelling, "Red Hots, get 'em while they're red hot!" through clouds of steam. Eventually one day becomes the next, and truth squats at the curb, blue as a bruise, as Jesuits move from warm milk in the refectory to desks piled with arcana, waiting till lunch to switch to the hard stuff. River like a slug in June, mud and more mud passing by, silt for the delta, memory scoured from banks upriver from territories once French and Indian, St. Louis regent of the upper valley, New Orleans the queen below. Imagine then the moment of purchase, the swift exchange of documents and flags, Toussaint and Napoleon menacing the freshly minted borders, the snits and snares of surrender to the bawdy boy of a nation set on conquest. A small army dispatched to measure mountains, to gather pelts and seed pods, to list the names of tribes on the journey west, thick-tongued mercenaries misinterpreting the nuances of fealty, frontmen for speculators who would reduce the filigree of Creole society to knots on a surveyor's rope. The tourist is to believe that what remains of this plot is a flair for gracious living, nostalgic tidbits of burnt sugar served on doilies in the quarter. But each steamboat Each steamboat gothic, every shotgun and project holds a secret, some hoodoo against the invader scrawled on wallpaper, stashed beneath the floorboards, locked in a pantry. The city itself settles deeper into that great bowl where all worlds, new and old, first and third, splash about. Point your shoes where you want to go. Only in this way will you know direction in a land that sloughs itself daily, where tiny territories slip between your toes and seasons exceed meaning, just bloom and rain and bloom, no gap between carnival and Lent, Lent and carnival, where upriver and down are the cardinal points, till the storm comes that changes the destiny of water, the current reversed like an infant refusing birth, aching back toward the warm and murky middle. Bend down here. Stroke the print of lovers in the sodden grass. A heel here, a knee there. The weight of their ardor in the aftermath. Watch the bodies of August wash by, and know your turn will come. Pray now for those on foot, that they make the bridge by sundown, that they cross over, mercy, cross over for good.
Thanks so much, Holly Iglesias. And that is Wordplay for today. Tune in again next week. More poetry on the air, or go see Holly down in Biltmore. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.